This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, March 13th, 2014. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, though the next presidential election is more than 2 years away, some are already ready for Hillary.
And as the Bentonville School District grows, so too does its course offerings. We visit a junior high school as students prepare for mountain biking. Plus, we learn about a Bentonville before Sam Walton.
But first, the guilty verdict announced earlier this week in the case of former Treasurer Martha Shaffner vindicated for some a year-long investigation. Shaffner was found guilty on all 14 counts of extortion and bribery and faces up to 20 years in prison. U.S. Attorney Christopher Thayer's office sought the indictment and prosecuted the case. Thayer says the severity of Shaffner's sentence is still being determined.
We are just now getting into that right now as far as what the sentencing guidelines will go in this case, and we have, you know, obviously not seen a pre-sentence report yet. That will be done, you know, in the coming days and weeks, and ultimately that sentence will be up to Judge Holmes.
Broker Steele Stevens was given immunity in exchange for testifying that Shaffner steered state business his way in exchange for cash payments delivered in pie boxes. Thayer says the fate of millions of dollars Stevens acquired through illegal deals is still uncertain and is beyond his office's jurisdiction.
Both chambers of the Arkansas legislature approved each other's $5 billion budget bills yesterday, referred to as the Revenue Stabilization Act. The bill's approval is one of the last actions of the session before adjournment next Wednesday. After the House recessed, Republican Speaker Davy Carter of Cabot reflected on the behavior of legislatures in the context of a divisive national political environment.
To be able to do what we did, working together, Republicans, Democrats, I think is remarkable. I'm very proud of that, and I'm proud of all the members for plying through the issues together. And I think that's what the 89th General Assembly, hopefully, we one of the things that they're remembered for. It just doesn't happen that way very many places.
Carter continued, saying the private option will be looked at in future years as a foundation for something that is good and can be continually built upon. The health care reform uses expanded eligibility and funds intended for Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act to purchase private insurance for low-income Arkansans. More than 100,000 state residents have gained coverage in the first few months of the program.
The Washington County Election Commission yesterday held its first meeting since the passing of its chairman, Commissioner John Logan Burrow. While the Democratic Party of Washington County isn't expected to name another appointee to the commission until next month, Jennifer Price, county election coordinator, says the commission still had some necessary business to conduct.
One of the reasons why we still needed to meet yesterday was we have this certain deadline for absentee ballots. You know, they have to be sent to the printer, you know, they have to be printed and sent back. And so you have like a tiny, you know, window to get that accomplished to meet different state requirements.
Price says even though the commission is normally comprised of three election commissioners, only two commissioners are required for a quorum.
Everything that we did yesterday did not require a unanimous vote. We didn't change any polling places. We didn't create precincts. We didn't set a different early vote site. The things that we did yesterday were just normal business things that we have to do for every single election.
Price says the Election Commission shouldn't have any difficulties in conducting its business during this election year once the Democratic Party appoints its next county election commissioner.
Northwest Arkansas Community College officials earlier this week moved forward with a longstanding plan to build a permanent facility in Springdale for Washington County students. The college's board voted at its meeting Monday to further negotiations to purchase 39 acres adjacent to Arvest Ballpark. Stephen Hines, director of public relations and marketing for NWAC, says that the board voted to allow the college itself, rather than its foundation, to continue negotiations for the land.
Part of the reason for that is that Dr. Jorgensen, our president, determined after hearing feedback at the focus groups we've been having that we could purchase the land more quickly through the college than if we waited for a fundraising campaign to occur through the foundation. And so the plan would be that the college would purchase the land and then the foundation would conduct a campaign to raise money to build the building.
The land purchase would be paid for using tuition revenue bonds that would be funded solely from tuition collected for classes in Washington County. Hines says that based on current enrollment and enrollment projections for Washington County, NWAC would easily be able to fund the land purchase through use of tuition revenue bonds.
if we were to see substantial declines, then we would be a little bit more concerned about that. But right now, we certainly feel good about it, and we are adding some additional technology classes at our Washington County Center on White Road, which we believe will increase enrollment there. We've heard that there are more students wanting to take those classes, so we think that that could help drive enrollment at that particular location, therefore more students in Washington County, which would be more tuition that could help in supporting those tuition revenue bonds.
Although the college has reported two semesters of overall enrollment declines at all of its facilities, Hines says that NWAC officials are certain that a permanent facility in Washington County will attract more students from Siloam Springs, Fayetteville, and from the outlying cities and areas surrounding Washington County's major cities. Last fall, NWAC reported enrollment increases at both of its current facilities in the county.
One of the top officials at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith is moving on. Ray Wallace, Provost and Senior Vice Chancellor at UAFS, will begin as Chancellor of Indiana University Southeast beginning in July. Wallace has been at the college since 2007, and prior to that, he held two arts and sciences deanships at Clayton State University near Atlanta and previously at Troy University in Montgomery, Alabama. He also served as director of the Louisiana Scholars College, that state's liberal arts and sciences honors college, and he also served as department head for languages and communications at Northwestern State University of Louisiana.
Forecast calls for mostly clear skies tonight, with overnight lows around 41 degrees. Tomorrow, Friday, mostly sunny with highs from 66 in northwest Arkansas to 69 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow evening, partly cloudy with a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 1 a.m. Overnight lows from 47 to 51 degrees.
This is Ozarks at Large. Fort Smith is in the middle of constructing a comprehensive plan for the city's future. The project Future Fort Smith began last year with seminars, workshops, and public forums. Up next, an open house Monday from 3 until 7 at the Riverfront Events Building in downtown Fort Smith. Wally Bailey is the Director of Development Services, which oversees planning and zoning in Fort Smith.
There will be several stations as you walk through that identify the history of the project, of the comprehensive plan, and the input that we have received so far. We started working, gathering public input in April of last year, and here we are a year later with much of that information through the open houses that we've had before, the community forums we've had before, the different things, all the input from the website. That information has been synthesized down into this information that will be at the open house in these six stations. And at the last station, it's been boiled down even further into here are some preferred development futures for the city of Fort Smith. Which one do you like? And so we'll ask the citizens and some of the citizens have already been through perhaps the first three or four or five stations, and they can just go straight to the voting and tell us, yeah, this matches my input says, or they can, gather the background information before they vote, and they can give us a thumbs up or a thumbs down, or tell us what they like or what they don't like about each of these possible scenarios. And from that, all that information of what they like and what they don't like and the thumbs up and the thumbs down, we're going to put all that information together and then come up with a preferred scenario for the future of Fort Smith.
The first word, of course, in this is future. Future can mean different things to different people. What sort of long-range planning, what sort of time frame is on what is coming out of this process?
Well, comprehensive plans are typically 20-year documents, plus or minus a little bit, but they're typically a 20-year plan. Sometimes things change and you have to update them quicker or sometimes you just have to just say, yeah, we're on the same track after 20 years. But typically it's 20 years, but it doesn't mean we start at year 20. It means we start immediately. When the plan is completed, with the help of the citizens and the Comprehensive Plan Steering Committee and all the input we have, when that's completed, there will be an implementation plan, and there will be goals and objectives and you know, deadlines for obtaining and achieving certain things. And there are some things that may just be cultural changes within the organization, where it's just, this is the way we're now going to do business from in the future, from this point forward. So it could be something as simple as that, or it could be something as simple as, you know, certain projects.
Second largest city in Arkansas, there are tens of thousands of potential opinions. I imagine most cities, when they look at a 20-year plan, they want as many of those opinions or eyeballs that are citizens involved. How do you try to get that buy-in from the people who live in Fort Smith?
Well, we try, through this process. This has been a very open and transparent process, getting that information. We've had the open house. We kicked it off with an open house. We've had community forums where citizens were invited to come and participate. We've even offered, and we have done, several what we call meetings in a box, where we've actually taken these community forums and other meetings to certain special groups. It could be a Sunday school class or just a group of acquaintances or a civic club, whatever it might be, that wanted to sit and give us their input. We've also have a website called futurefortsmith.com, and that's the URL for it, and we've obtained information through that means. We've had another online virtual city hall or process called the Mind Mixer. It's put together for us. We've tried to do a lot of outreach to try to get as much public input as possible. In addition to that, we have a comprehensive plan steering committee that has 27 members, and those members are in the community, and people can talk to them, and we have their names and addresses on the website, and they can talk and communicate with them and give them the thoughts and ideas as well.
Wally Bailey is the Director of Development Services for the City of Fort Smith. The next Future Fort Smith open house is Monday from 3 until 7 at the Riverfront Event Center in downtown Fort Smith. Also thinking about the future, Bob and Linda McMath. Bob is the Dean of the Honors College at the University of Arkansas, and the couple this morning announced they were making a $100,000 commitment to help support the PATH program, a new initiative to help prepare students from underrepresented populations attend the University of Arkansas.
Inspiration for creating this particular scholarship was the plan that one of our staff members, Mary Beth Lyons, came up with a program, a kind of a bridge program that would help students come to the University of Arkansas who might not have thought about it before, might not have met the qualifications. And so this will be a scholarship that will be open to students from underrepresented groups who are part of this program. And it just looked like exactly the thing that we were hoping to accomplish.
And how will this work? I know there's a matching element to it, correct?
There is a matching element. We are putting in $50,000 right now over the next 3 years. And students, alumni, faculty members, whoever would like to join us in this can contribute any amount. And if it's matched over the next 3 years, then it will that the scholarship will be at a $100,000 level. We do have a separate commitment for an estate gift of an additional $50,000.
How will the scholarship be identified? How will you work with schools throughout the state?
The Honors College will work with schools throughout the state to identify students for the PATH program, that is, getting involved in this program as high school students to prepare for college. The Honors College leadership will select people from among that group to receive the scholarship. Of course, I will not be involved in making that selection, but students who have been part of the PATH program will be eligible for it. And we hope there'll be other scholarships like this that will be created down the road.
Obviously, it's not difficult to understand the benefit for the students who will receive the help going to a school. What can be the benefit for a university campus for having more underrepresented students on campus?
Well, I think just the idea that it benefits all of us if we have a diverse population of students and faculty and staff. Everybody brings different skills, different experiences, different points of view to the campus, and so it's just part of the overall overall program of the university to make our campus as diverse as possible. I would say also, as a public university, a land-grant university, we have an obligation to try to make university experience available to anybody in the state who's willing to take the challenge.
Bob McMath is the dean of the Honors College at the University of Arkansas. The $100,000 commitment to the PATH program made by Linda and Bob McMath was announced earlier today. This is Ozarks at Large.
As we begin to enjoy longer days and warmer temperatures, we also begin to look ahead to spring flowers, outdoor activities, and an arts event that brings the two together.
There's going to be 10 sculptures around Northwest Arkansas all over, kind of like terrarium. So some of them will be indoor, some of them will be outdoor, but they'll have little digital sensors on them. And so when you move or make sound, that will trigger this algorithm that will produce water, and in turn the plant will grow.
In just under half an hour on this edition of Ozarks, we preview the Arts and Nature Festival that is Walton Arts Center's Artisphere.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, an increasingly popular practice to deal with stray cats: trap, neuter, release.
We've reduced the number drastically from a very low 20% of cats being saved 3 years ago to somewhere in the 60% range.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
It begins this afternoon at 1 o'clock on 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Roby Brock, who is a content partner, friend of Ozarks at Large, has been a contributor to Ozarks at Large since we went daily with his TalkBusiness.net, TalkBusiness Arkansas. His latest project is Talk Business and Politics, a television show that is aired on Little Rock's KATV, the ABC affiliate in Central Arkansas. Steve Inman, who is an anchor and a member of the KATV news team, is the co-host of Talk Business and Politics with Roby Brock.
That's right. Elections in 2014 will dominate much of the conversation in the coming months here in Arkansas, but it's not too early to begin looking toward 2016. KATV's Steve Inman spoke with Craig Smith for a recent episode of Talk Business and Politics with Roby Brock. Craig Smith is a senior advisor to a political action committee called Ready for Hillary.
There's probably no potential candidate being talked about more for the 2016 presidential race than the former First Lady of this state and former First Lady of our country and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Before we get into why you're in Arkansas now and why you're a part of this political action committee, you do have a long history with the natural state. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I went to high school in Searcy. Went to college at the University of Arkansas. I went to work in the governor's office for Governor Bill Clinton back in 1985. First employee of Clinton for president in 1991. Political director of that campaign, and then from there went on to Washington.
Yeah, so you have definitely have Arkansas roots, to say the least. So now, as the fundraising kind of gets kicked into high gear this far out, tell me why Arkansas and why now is this effort being brought?
Well, you know, there's a couple reasons. One of the things we're trying to do is we're trying to make sure that there is a outlet for all of this enthusiasm that's across the country, not only here in Arkansas, but in all 50 states, of people who think Hillary Clinton should be the next president of the United States. They think she's the most qualified candidate in either party, and there's this excitement out there. And it is our goal to try to organize and channel all of this excitement, not only for her if she decides to run in 2016, but to be able to channel all of this excitement to use in the 2014 races too.
Let me read you a couple of numbers. The 2008 Democratic primary here in Arkansas, obviously Mrs. Clinton did very well, 70% to then Senator Obama's 26%. But if you go to the 2012 general, Mitt Romney carried this state with 61% of the vote. And the last four presidential elections, Arkansas has gone Republican. So what makes you think Hillary could take the natural state?
The only two times that a Clinton has been the Democratic nominee for president, Arkansas went Democratic. I think we'll try Clinton as the Democratic nominee for president again and see what happens.
And well, certainly Clinton is favored, too, if you look at every potential head-to-head matchup that I could find so far. Mrs. Clinton is beating the potential Republican candidate for president. Certainly, all of the talk on the Democratic side is with Hillary Clinton. The Republicans have a half a dozen guys, maybe, that may or may not run. Is that an advantage when it comes to fundraising?
Well, you know, it does help. I think, you know, there's this kind of interesting juxtaposition. You know, normally it's the Democrats that have this huge fight going on and this huge battle within the party, and the Republicans are very organized and very, you know, they are quick to a consensus. Here we see, as we go into 2016, the Democrats across the country are united behind the most qualified candidate. In this case, it's Hillary Clinton. The Republicans are spinning off in four or five different directions. You know, so it's somewhat unusual, being a lifelong Democrat, to see our party so organized and unified this early, and the Republicans in somewhat of disarray over there on that side.
Now, you mentioned the energy for the 2014 election, too. If you're getting donations now for 2016, and you are signing people up and getting donations for Hillary Clinton for president, is there a fear at all you're taking money away from a couple of tight races in this state?
No, not really. You know, 98% of the people that give us money are contributions of less than $100. Actually, about half of the people who've given us money, like 23,000 people, have given us contributions in the exact amount of $20.16 for the 2016. So we're not soliciting huge chunks of money, because at the end of the day, we're a super PAC. We can never give her the money if she decides to run. But the names and the enthusiasm and the lists are what's more important to us than the money. So, you know, a $20.16 check or online contribution isn't going to be really having that much impact on anybody else, I don't believe.
So the natural follow-up question to that is can it make a difference in a campaign when it may take $1 billion to run for president?
Well, you know what? If you can get somebody to give you $20.16 now in the hopes that Hillary Clinton will run, if she decides to run, they'll give more than that down the road.
Now, I do want to touch on the numbers. How many people have you signed up? And obviously, you're not just taking money, you're also getting some information. What are you going to do with this?
Well, right now we've signed up about 1.8 million supporters across the country. We have 850,000 people who have indicated that if she runs that they will volunteer to help on the campaign. We've received contributions from over 50,000 people. As I said, most of them very small amounts. And this is a way to demonstrate to her that if she is willing to make this race, that there will be millions of people out there willing to help her do this.
All right, Craig Smith, thanks very much for joining us.
That was KATV's Steve Inman speaking with Craig Smith for a recent episode of Talk Business and Politics with Roby Brock. Smith is a senior advisor to a political action committee titled Ready for Hillary.
It is Thursday, March 13th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large, and joining me now is Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Let's look forward to spring break.
Let's do it.
This is the Washington County installment. The Benton County installment was yesterday, and all of it will be in What's Up Tomorrow in Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. In Washington County, Springdale specifically, the Art Center of the Ozarks is doing a week-long art camp that will highlight painting, drawing, and clay. And that happens from 10 to noon and or 1 to 3 p.m., starting the 24th through the 28th. You can find out more at 751-5441. Arts Life Theater in Fayetteville is doing the Big Apple Musical Theater Camp with the inimitable Jules Taylor. Children will sing, dance, and give a public performance. That's for ages 9 to 12.
I know a kid that would like that one.
And Let's Create a Play Together, also with Jules, for ages 5 to 8, 24th through 28th. Call 521-4932. And the Community Creative Center at the Nadine Baum Studios is offering Treasures from the Wilderness. And during their camp, children ages 6 to 8 and 9 to 10 in two different classes will collect found items during nature walks to use in wind chimes, mosaic birdhouses, stepping stones, leaf prints, fairy doors, and more. And you can find out more at 571-2706.
Oh, to be a kid again.
No kidding.
Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Bentonville Public School District, with more than 15,000 students, is one of the fastest growing districts in the country. And it may be among the first in the nation to integrate outdoor mountain biking classes into its physical education curriculum. The endeavor is the result of a collaboration among administrators, teachers, parents, major donors, and students. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Folick takes us to gym class at Lincoln Junior High in North Bentonville to learn more.
Lincoln Junior High School principal Jonathan Guthrie leads us through a maze of girls practicing basketball drills this afternoon to a large storage unit just under the hoop. The unit's stuffed with 75 bikes, new Trek mountain bikes stored for the moment.
When the weather's nice, they'll get out and ride.
The district's now legendary bike program first took root several years ago here at Lincoln Junior High, which counts 800 students, 7th and 8th grade, one of 17 schools in the district. The Bentonville Public Schools Foundation provided the seed money for the initial purchase of 25 bikes. The program has since greatly expanded into all the district's PE classes with the purchase of 540 more.
Which works out so perfectly because their kids can just go out after they get comfortable on the bikes and learn the safety and a little bit of the maintenance. Then they take them back on the trails.
Part of a 38-mile-long complex of multi-use trails in Bentonville, some of which pass through Compton Gardens and Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art.
Getting kids outside, getting them off of video games and you know, outside doing something is fantastic. We love it.
Principal Guthrie has since purchased his own bike so he can ride along.
We've on some field trips, I've ridden with the kids.
Elementary school mountain bike field trips. That's cool. Around 30 kids are dedicated mountain bike club members, the principal says, but the bike class is mandatory to a point.
They all have to learn about the bikes, and they all have to do a minimum amount of skills on there. But then, once they get to a certain point, it's optional. They'll have different teachers will take different groups of students, and we'll take the ones that really want to do it, and they'll be able to go, like I said, on the trails, or they'll ride on the paved trails up to Lake Bella Vista and back, and just some really cool things.
So what happens when the bikes break? Typical hourly bench fees run $25 an hour at retail bike shops. Science teacher Jason Swim is supervising bike mechanic.
We build the school, so it's part of the small business operations part of the class. So those students are, well, they're all the same class. So they're in my shop part of the time, and they're in Ms. Emil's classroom part of the time. And when they're in Ms. Emil's classroom, they learn how to write invoices. They learn how to write purchase orders, do billing, marketing, social media, all the stuff a modern business person needs to be able to handle. So they cover a lot of that stuff. And we interact with the bookkeepers at the schools, and it's just like it was a regular account. If we were a business, only we don't ever charge labor because they're kids. They don't draw a paycheck. So it's just them working on the bikes. It's only parts that are an actual cost overhead for us.
The shop's fully equipped with professional bike stands, workbenches, and all the necessary tools. And during the bike season, spring and fall, the shop is jammed with broken bikes. One age group in particular tends to be most culprit.
Our elementary kids, for their PE class, generally don't have the stamina to ride very far or very fast, so there's not a whole lot of overhead for damage. Middle school kids can be a little rougher. The major wear and tear are junior high students who are in those fits of teenage years where faster is better and they like to crash into things. So that's those are our best customers right now.
Unfixable bikes are replaced by the schools out of their budgets, an incentive to not abuse the equipment. And no bikes have been ripped off so far. 10th grade Gateway student Ernesto Garcia knew nothing about bikes before he signed up for the bike shop class. Now he's repairing them for family and friends. And his favorite thing about the class?
It's just getting along with the classmates. It's always hands-on. It's not always paperwork. and we usually never get homework.
Ernesto enjoys truing wheels the most. That's straightening warped tire rims. He intends to run his own business someday, and his classmate Dustin will likely open his own bike repair shop.
I'm Dustin Clover. I'm 17. I bike, so I really like this shop because it's teaching me a lot, and I really wanted to get a job at a bike shop.
And how's your bike now? Is it in tip-top shape?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's perfect. It's better than it was before I got in the class, I'll tell you that much. It's really helpful.
So now you're always looking at bikes wanting to fix them?
Yeah, yeah.
Dustin, turns out, is a brakes master, one of the most complex parts of a bike to calibrate. Now, high schools across dozens of states have established biking leagues that compete with other schools and even in community cycling events. But this ambitious district-wide bike program was made possible through the singular effort of Mary Lay.
And I'm an executive director of communications and community partnerships at Bentonville Public Schools.
Mary Lay is a competitive athlete who, with her husband, Alan, outreach director for Bike Bentonville, approached the Walton Family Foundation to help purchase the necessary bikes for their program. The foundation granted their wish. Coca-Cola's Jim Conway provided the money to purchase critical bicycle parts to stock the repair shop's inventory. And Fat Tire, a local bike retailer, brokered the deal with Trek Bike Company based in Wisconsin and also donated bike pumps, tools, and tubes. 24 parents and members of the Bella Vista Bike Club helped to assemble the 540 bikes, transported in boxes via tractor trailer to a donated warehouse space by AMP sign and banner.
And I asked each PE teacher to donate 3 hours of their personal time to put bikes together. And we have 60 PE teachers, so they all gave me, and we ended up with 450 volunteer hours putting bikes together.
In-person hours these days are incredibly valuable. And altogether, Mary Lay raised $137,000 for the Trek bike purchase. $13,000 worth of helmets were also donated. Flinko Construction built bike storage racks for inside school buildings, and Bike Bentonville provided program support and T-shirts. The bike program, Mary Lay says, has been a great equalizer.
And so it's an equalizer for gender, it's an equalizer for culture, it's an age equalizer. In fact, I don't know anything that's more equal than a bicycle.
According to body mass index screening data for Arkansas elementary students, a majority are overweight. But bike programs like these can encourage lifestyle changes. Mary Lay described one student who was given a commuter bike.
And he fixed this bike up and he started riding it to school and back. He was no longer late for school and he lost like 60 pounds.
Bikes are also being retrofitted to accommodate special needs students in the district, Lay says, including autistic kids who are often deficit in motor skills. She's getting emails from delighted parents who can bike as a family pack now. Mary Lay is also responsible for writing and illustrating a special 70-page bike program curriculum filled with maps and resources. It's called Trail Time.
Biggest part of the curriculum is teaching safety and proper biking skills. You know, teach the forefront of the foot to be on the pedal, teach proper hand signals, not to put your headphones on while you're riding your bike. You know, a lot of it is all training on how to ride correctly, how to watch for traffic, how to stop before you cross the road, and hopefully that the safety issue will, and practicing safety drills at school will help them from having bike wrecks.
And district-wide, only 3 bike wrecks have occurred, minor crashes. As of last May, 100% of all 3rd through 8th graders at Bentonville Public Schools had participated in the bike program, and an intramural session for high schoolers offers both road and mountain biking courses. And because the bike program is now driving into the local community, the Bentonville Public Schools were awarded the 2013 Gold Medallion by the National Schools Public Relations Association. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This week in This American Life, Lewis grew up in the United States, but he was undocumented. And in his late 20s, he was deported to Mexico, where he got a job in what is a thriving industry down there of call centers filled with people who were kicked out of the United States with great English who miss living in the United States.
Man. You know, like these people are calling from over there, and I just wish I could just go through this phone and be over there, you know?
No place like home this week.
Listen Sunday morning at 10 to 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. In just a few minutes, we travel back in time to the creation of Benton County, Arkansas. But first, a few things to take note of for the upcoming weekend. Rogers Heritage High School and Rogers High School Theater Dance Classes present the first ever theater dance production, Raising the Bar, this weekend. It's scheduled for 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon at the Rogers High School Auditorium. That's at 2300 South Dixieland Road. Tickets, $5. Kids 12 and younger will be admitted free. Donations will be accepted. All proceeds benefit student scholarships. Doors open at 1:30 p.m.
A quick reminder that applications for the 2014 Upstream Art Project are due tomorrow. Any artists interested in helping decorate local storm drains for this project should contact Jay Maginot at jmaginot@uaex.edu, or you can call her at 479-444-1755.
Author Sherry Heading will have a book signing for her new work, I Won't Let Go, at 2 o'clock March 15th at Barnes & Noble in Rogers. According to a news release, the Branson, Missouri author's book tells the compelling true story about a family and a woman whose international child custody battle unwraps itself into a much bigger picture, exposing judicial and political corruption, kidnappings, death threats, prostitution, drugs, money, and the power that they hold in the fight to save a little girl. That's March 15th at 2 o'clock. She'll have that signing.
The Friends of India and the Hindu Student Association are hosting the annual Spring Festival of Holi, also known as the Festival of Colors, this weekend. The festival will begin at 9:30 a.m. That's Saturday at Wilson Park in Fayetteville. Guests are invited to join the two student organizations for the fun and playful atmosphere of colors, music, and dance as you toss colored powder to celebrate the end of winter. Free food will be provided. Visit Facebook event Holi 2014 on Facebook.
I might go this year. The free extraction day, sponsored by the Dental Hygiene Clinic at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, was originally supposed to happen last December. It's now set for March 15th. The event, which was originally planned for December and canceled because of inclement weather, allows members of the Fort Smith community to have a tooth pulled for free. Hours 8 until 2 at the clinic, which is located in the Pendergraph Health Sciences Center on Waldron Road. Patients will be seen on a first-come, first-served basis and should bring a list of medications they're currently taking.
Long before the days of Sam Walton and Walmart, Bentonville was an agriculture town.
Surprising enough, I think a lot of people are very surprised to find that one of our very earliest crops was tobacco. And we were known to raise better tobacco than they raised in Virginia or the Carolinas. We had two or three tobacco rolling stores along on the square. And so that was really our first crop.
Leah Whitehead, president of the Benton County Historical Society, helps us find out what's in a name in Benton County and Bentonville. The Historical Society here is one of the oldest in Arkansas, founded in 1954 with help from the familiar name of Dr. Neil Compton. Benton County, however, was founded over 100 years earlier. The land was once part of Lovely County.
And then in 1836, at the time that it was ratified as a state, and that was in 1836 in September, and we also became the county seat here in Bentonville. At that time, we were known as Osage, and we did not become Bentonville until 1847.
Lovely County disappeared despite its quaint name. Benton came from Thomas Hart Benton, who was one of the first senators elected in the neighboring state of Missouri. Nicknamed Old Bullion, he worked closely with President Andrew Jackson and was a staunch advocate for westward expansion.
Anyone that would could claim 160 acres of land as long as they would work the soil. Now, originally, he felt that the Rocky Mountains would be, you know, the furthest west. Then he did away with that idea and decided that the Pacific Coast was the end of the line. So he was very much into land movement and settlers on the land and progressing toward what we could be.
Many credit him with Arkansas becoming a state in 1836. But who decided to honor T.H. Benton with the naming of the county and the town? As it turns out, the Historical Society has gone over that very question numerous times.
We believe that it was probably the original founders of the county, you know, the leading movers and shakers at that time. And that is why, you know, it became Benton County, because he was so well respected. And the fact that he did come here several times, so people were aware of all that he had done.
Thomas Hart Benton's nephew of the same name was the well-known painter. Perhaps following in his uncle's footsteps, much of his work featured people and landscapes of the American Midwest. Leah Whitehead has lived in Benton County for her entire life. Growing up in Pea Ridge, she remembers coming to the big city of Bentonville.
So the big thing was, on Easter in particular, and I think of that now since we're coming into that season, was to come to Bentonville to Putnam's store and get your Easter dress. So it was always a fun place, because when you lived out in the country, you know, to come into Bentonville, that was big, big time. It was. And then I can remember on Easter Sunday, a lot of times my parents and my family and I, we would go to the Massey Hotel. There was a restaurant there, and we would go there for Easter dinner.
Like many small towns in the late 1960s and early 70s, people started moving out of the downtown area, building strip malls and big box stores, and a lot of the smaller locally owned establishments could not compete. However, in recent years, Whitehead credits a good downtown business plan to the revitalization of a thriving downtown Bentonville and square. Speaking of the square, there has been much talk and debate over the statue of a Confederate soldier that stands in the center of the square. Whitehead says it is part of the town's history.
They have said over many years that it was actually James Henderson Berry, who was the 14th governor of Arkansas. But I think that came about as a result that the James H. Berry chapter of the Daughters of the Confederacy actually sponsored the statue and placing it in the square. So I think that's why most people say that, you know, it's James H. Berry. However, it isn't, because he lost his right leg in the Battle of Corinth, Mississippi, during the Civil War. So therefore, you know, this guy's got both legs.
And though Bentonville is typically known for Walmart these days, Whitehead says the small town feel remains.
Yes, we're growing by leaps and bounds, thanks to, you know, Crystal Bridges, 21C, all of the new things that have come to town. But it still retains that small town atmosphere, and you can just feel it, and you can still stop and talk to your neighbor on the square.
As she says, you can still see evidence of the town and county's history. The Historical Society is complete with a small exhibit housed inside their home, an old schoolhouse constructed in 1866. And in May, the Historical Society will host a tour of both historical homes and contemporary homes, those built on lots in the historic district that were once homes of something else. For more information, BentonCountyHistoricalSociety.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blue Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this Friday. I brought in Roger Plourd, the Ozark Blues Society president. He talks about the 2014 Blues in the Natural State, happening April 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Headlining the festival this year, Tab Benoit, Royal Southern Brotherhood, featuring Devin Allman, Cyril Neville, and Mike Zito, Samantha Fish, the Cape Brothers, RJ Michaud, and more. Hear about it this Friday night on the Generic Blues Show. We'll see you then.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas, and joining me now is Beth Bobbitt, Public Relations Director at Walton Arts Center.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, the sun's shining, and the high's supposed to be, you know, mid to upper 60s today.
Right.
We're starting to look ahead to springtime.
Yes, and of course, in that spirit, Artisphere is coming, and so love to talk a little bit about what we have coming up.
That's right. You just released pretty much the whole lineup.
Right.
Yesterday.
Yes. And there will be things added along the way, so I encourage people to check the website for updates, but there's a lot going on,
there
so it's
is.
Very exciting.
Well, one of my favorite Artisphere activities is Trail Mix.
Yes, mine too.
And I know last year we had snow in May.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, when does that ever happen? But we did have to move the Trail Mix inside, and We had a great time. We had some bands and the big dinosaurs, and so it was fun. But the idea of Trail Mix is to be outside and on, you know, right. our gorgeous trails.
Because it's arts and nature.
Right, yes.
Is the date different?
Well, the date for Trail Mix this year is June 1st. So it is a little bit later than normal, but we do want to make sure that everything happens on one day so that, you know, if you miss it at Crystal Bridges Trail in Bentonville, you can catch it again at the Frisco Trail in Fayetteville. So it's a day long. There's lots of different bands, a lot of local bands, Candy Lee and the Sweets, Carter Sampson. The Artist Fair Festival Orchestra will have ensembles. And so for those that don't know, the idea is that you set up these music stations along the trail, and then people are encouraged to just come and walk and bike and be with their families and listen to the music along the way. And
right, you can stop.
Right.
And kind of, I've seen people bring blankets, and they just kind of camp out for 20 minutes or longer. If you want.
It's such a fun day, and it's really funny to see people that stumble upon it. That's kind of, you know, one of the elements of Artisphere is to surprise and delight, and, you know, Trail Mix is just a fun day for the family.
Well, so that's a little bit of a performing art.
Yes.
Another art is visual arts.
Yes. Yes. So we have lots and lots of visual arts this year. It's really jam-packed. We have our outdoor installation, the Spiral Wetland, which was up last year, that will remain up. We have some new things this year. We have an exhibit called Synesthesia, which is basically an audio and visual and olfactory sensory exhibit. So you come in, there's installations set up, you listen to the music, you smell these scents.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then when you get to the end, there'll be an Artisphere scent. So that opens on May 16th. And we'll have a big Artisphere celebration on May 16th, and you can come and meet some of these Artisphere artists and get to know the festival and hear some music. That'll be happening as well.
So do you have any idea what Artisphere smells like?
I don't yet. I mean, in my head, I have an idea. It's, you know, it's spring, it's fresh, but I'm excited to see, and there may be an opportunity for people to purchase that scent. We're not sure yet, but that'll definitely be, you know, an installation you'll want to check out when you're at the Art Center.
There are the stick sculptures that are out front.
Yes.
And you mentioned Spiral Wetlands.
Yes.
Can we expect to see, and you mentioned surprises earlier. Are we going to have a surprise installation somewhere?
Yes. Well, actually, there is a project called Enviro Fountains, and this is really cool. There are three local artists that have come up with this idea, and it's funded by the Artisphere grants. So they're still actually working on the idea, but the concept is there's going to be 10 sculptures around Northwest Arkansas, all over, kind of like terrarium. So some of them will be indoor, some of them will be outdoor, but they'll have little digital sensors on them, and so when you move or make sound, that will trigger this algorithm that will produce water, and in turn the plant will grow. So it's a very, again, interesting and exciting project that, you know, we haven't seen yet, but it's one that you'll have to experience for yourself, and it kind of raises questions about, you know, how ecology and technology can coexist, and really, really fits with the theme of Artisphere. So I'm excited about that one.
Well, and it's bringing together a lot of different elements.
Yes.
I mean, again, yeah.
Yeah, and raising questions. And that's what art does. You know, it doesn't necessarily answer all of our questions, but it gets people talking, and it gets the dialogue of arts and nature and sustainability going. And so it's a whole idea.
Well, I mentioned that Trail Mix is one of my favorites.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite?
Well, Trail Mix is definitely one of my favorites. I also really enjoy the music element. We have the Artisphere Festival Orchestra coming back, and 80 musicians from around the world come here and for 2 weeks and perform all over. One thing that we've done in the past is had a series called the Chapel Music Series. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the AFO musicians play in that, and sometimes there are other artists, local artists. And this year we have four different performances. Shannon Wurst is playing at Thorn Crown. A band called Cry You One will be at Cooper Chapel. And then we'll have the Dover Quartet performing at a couple different places. But this is, you know, just kind of a rare opportunity to hear this beautiful music in these really intimate and sacred places, and doesn't seat very many people, of course. So those tickets always sell out. And so I recommend, if you're interested in that, to go ahead and check that out now.
Well, I know I went to one at the Cooper Chapel last year, and it is. It's just, I mean, you have, it's a lot of glass, and you can see the trees, and it is. It's beautiful.
Yeah, especially in those Faye Jones spaces. It's just, you feel like you are out in nature and hearing the music, and it's just very inspiring.
Earlier, you mentioned affordability, and these tickets last year, I know they were only like $10.
Yeah, so these tickets are $10, and most of the tickets are $10 or $6 or free. You know, the idea is to just really engage the community and make arts accessible. And so we do make sure that those are free or low cost.
Well, engaging the community, is there a movement series this year?
We're bringing back the Trey McIntyre Project. And I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Tell me about it.
Gosh, they're amazing. They're a contemporary dance group out of Boise. They've got a great rep. They're going to, you know, dance to the music of Queen. But their whole focus is engaging the community and going out and doing these educational things. They also have what they call Spurbins, which is basically spontaneous but choreographed dance movements for public places. So you might go to the shopping mall and see these performers dancing, or to the park or something like that. So they'll be here for about a week performing all over Northwest Arkansas. The main performance is part of 10 by 10. So those tickets are just $10, and that will be on May 16th. And then, of course, there'll be a pre-show conversation and a post-show party. So that'll be a lot of fun. And those tickets will go fast as well.
You mentioned the public places and spontaneous. Is this kind of the professional version of like a Smash Mob?
Yeah, maybe? It kind of is. Yeah. It's smaller scale, of course. Yeah. It's very fun to watch and see, again, the surprise on people's faces. And it's just a great thing and a staple of Artisphere, you know, to take these performers out into the community. And
well, so Artisphere begins in May.
Yes.
The 1st of May, and then it runs all the way through June.
All the way through June. So it's 2 months long. There'll probably be over last year, I think there were 80 different events and activities happening, you know, again, all over Northwest Arkansas, not just at Walton Arts Center. So you can go online and get the full listing, but this was kind of just at a glance.
And so is it artisphere.org?
Well, actually, it's waltonartscenter.org/artisphere. So if you go on the Walton Arts Center homepage, then you'll hit a button and go to Artisphere.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Beth.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Beth Bobbitt is Public Relations Director at Walton Arts Center.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night from 10 till midnight. On this Friday edition of Shades of Jazz, I'll pay tribute to the great Belgian harmonica player and composer Toots Thielemans, probably best known for his film score work. He did the soundtrack for Midnight Cowboy. We'll also hear from Marcus Roberts and Matt Wilson, the Yellow Jackets, Woody Shaw, and much more. That's Shades of Jazz this Friday at 10 p.m.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Gentry.
Gentry. That's in Benton County.
It sure is.
All right.
All right.
There you go. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
You will be back tomorrow for an all-new edition with Antoinette Grajeda.
That is the plan, yes.
All right. Well, until then, thank you so much for listening, and have a good Thursday. To end today's show, we will end with a song by Corey Smith. He is a Georgia-born country music artist, and he's stopping in Fayetteville tomorrow evening at George's on his way, I think, back home, kind of out of the way a little bit, from South by Southwest. West in Austin. So this is Corey Smith's song, 21.
I'd hang around on Clayton Street in the bars, they're getting drunk. A baseball cap and a fake ID would get me in the clubs. Then I would dance with the college girls and lie about who I was. I'd say I'm pre-med here at UGA, live on Millage Avenue. I was raised over in Buckhead, I'd drive a BMW.